Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. The public does not believe that you can lead this change, and nor do I. We have got that story, plus the worldwide wiretap once more and more. But first, problem. CDC coordinates with World Health Organization amid hantavirus scare, the Center for Disease Creation, coordinating with the World Health Organization to help global authorities contain a hantavirus outbreak aboard a cruise ship, which you first heard about here last week on New World Next Week, signaling collaboration from the U.S. with international authorities despite changes to its global public health strategy that experts say make the country more vulnerable to disease. The U.S. formally withdrew from the World Health Organization earlier this year following an executive order by DJ Trump signed in his first 100 days and also massive cuts to the CDC. But since reports surfaced earlier this month of a hantavirus outbreak aboard the MV Hondius, a cruise ship operated by the Netherlands-based Oceanwide Expeditions, scientists, trust the scientists, they've set off a global rapid effort to uncover how the strain emerged. WHO officials said U.S. health experts are providing technical support and exchanging information as authorities work to stop the spread of this rare form of hantavirus that has so far killed 3 people and infected 5 others. We should definitely shut down the world for 8 people. Things are going actually as it used to be, meaning sharing information from our side and also with getting information from the U.S. side, whose Director General Dr. Tedros somewhat confusingly said, so if it's the same, why does it matter if the U.S. is in or out? It almost is like it doesn't even matter, James. Trump had issued an executive order after taking office, pledging to leave the World Health Organization after criticizing its mishandling of the COVID scamdemic and ties to China, where Trump is literally at this moment with his coterie of CEOs. The U.S. departure upended the work between the nation's health officials and collaborators across the globe. Yeah, that'll get you war crimes charges later. And raise concerns over the U.S.'s involvement in, I guess, all of this. Googly mugglers. World Health Organization heads Anais Lagan, technical lead for viral hemorrhagic fevers at the World Health Organization, told repeaters she's collaborating with her counterpart at the CDC on a hantavirus outbreak, and they interact almost every single day. Reaction. World Health Organization chief sure hopes U.S. and Argentina will rejoin amid hantavirus outbreak. The aforementioned Dr. Tedros expressed hope that the ongoing hantavirus will convince the United States and Argentina to reverse their departures from the agency. Tedros stressed that pathogens do not heed political divisions, national borders, or justifications for disengagement. They do, however, heed paper masks and 6 feet. And insisted that solidarity remains the strongest defense against infectious threats. He underscored that any uncovered space in the global health architecture ultimately benefits the terrorists. Oh, wait, I mean the virus. And of course, here comes the solution. The 79th World Health Assembly running May 18th through the 23rd. So all those super spreaders are congregating together in person via carbon spewing jets to warn me about some communicable diseases. Do I have that straight, James?
Yeah, I think so. So surely they're going to lead by example, right? Surely they're not going to stay at their 4-star hotels and, you know, fly in by private jet. No, they're going to sit there in their grovel hovels and communicate via Zoom, right? Oh, something tells me that will not be on the cards. But what will be on the cards for the World Health Assembly coming up conveniently, just at the exact time that the world is freaking out with this new hantavirus scare? Well, we can get more information on it from our good friends at Chatham House. That's right, the mothership / progenitor organization of the CFR conspirators there in the U.S. In England, they're talking about global health reform cannot wait for a new world order. Middle powers must act now. And they take the interesting cue for this geopolitical / biosecurity think piece from arch crony Mark Carney there in Canada with his famous World Economic Forum speech and the idea of middle powers in this emerging multipolar world order and the variable geometry of not being able to convene on issues by themselves. So they have to Corral's support for issues such as pandemic preparedness, antimicrobial resistance, digital health governance, and climate health linkages, which each require a different coalition moving at different speeds. And this is going to be how the new multipolar world order is going to act, et cetera, et cetera. So I will throw that link into that propaganda for people who are interested in exploring it, because I think it tells us something about the way they are trying to move the needle, not only on the biosecurity agenda, but towards multipolar world governance generally. And then we got this from Center for Global Development. Three issues to watch at WHA 79. That's the World Health Assembly, number 79. Number one, WHO financing is deteriorating. Oh no, they're losing money for their scam. Number two, WHO prioritization is failing because their deeds do not match their words. I'm shocked to find gambling going on in this establishment. And number three, WHO leadership of the global health architecture has been set up to fail. You know, where have we heard those words before? Oh, yeah, 9/11 Commission. Anyway, the idea is they need more power, and how are they going to grab it? And just in case anyone in our audience, I can't imagine, but just in case there is any normie who has stumbled upon this video who doesn't understand it yet, this is a psyop from top to bottom. Case in point number one, this op-ed from The Hill, specifically Mark Siegel, who writes, "Hantavirus made me reconsider the World Health Organization. Trump should too. The World Health Assembly, the main decision-making body of the World Health Organization, is meeting this year in Geneva starting next Monday. This meeting may represent the last chance for the U.S. to reverse course and remain a member of the WHO. The organization's superb handling of the ongoing hantavirus outbreak is the main reason I believe the U.S. should stay," says this establishment stooge. Meanwhile, in reality, I will point people to a very good op-ed on Brownstone Institute from David Bell. He writes, "Hantavirus, the WHO, and the conflicts in weighing mortality." And he starts by noting that yesterday, almost 2,000 people, mostly young children, died of malaria because they could not access effective and relatively cheap treatment quickly enough. About 4,000 people died of tuberculosis, including many young adults, leaving orphans. This happens every day. Progress in reducing these numbers is stalling, as partly due to the continuing economic damage from the COVID-19 response. But in contrast, what is everyone freaking out about? In the past 2 weeks, three tourists unfortunately died among about 150 passengers and crew on a cruise ship off the coast of the African continent where most of those malaria and TB deaths occurred. And major freak out, and now everyone in the world has to be concerned about this hantavirus, which I guarantee, personally give you a hand-delivered guarantee, you are not going to die of hantavirus. But my God, we all have to dedicate our whole lives and existences to praying the WHO will be able to save us from this scourge. It is 100% that is something that is being beamed into your mind by the media. You wouldn't even know that hantavirus existed unless you were one of those 30 Americans or so who die of hantavirus every year, but you don't hear about them because it's not part of the news cycle that's being generated to gin up the WHA 79 hype. So keep that in mind when they are shoving a story like this in front of your face, even though it does not and will not affect your life in any way, shape, or form, it is part of an agenda.
I would argue it could affect our lives because of the idiocy that surrounds all of this. And James, that's really my biggest disappointment over the last decade or so. I pretty much come to terms with being okay with people have different beliefs. They want to vote for this. They want to vote for that. I think we can still kind of work together while I'll be independent 9/11 truth or media mark. Then Trump and COVID happened. I think everybody's crazy and dangerous. That's why I live out in the boonies now. They are not to be trusted. Sorry. I don't know if you got anybody in the cruise business, James, but we have talked in the past before scary events like this happen. People die on these cruises. It's not a rarity. So if you're on a cruise and they suddenly say, "Ice cream, everybody," that means they got a corpse in the cooler. Fact. You can look that up. They will put dead bodies in the coolers of these ships when they can't come to shore just yet. So get a little gnar on this New World Next Week, episode 630. Yeah, they want to move the needle into all of us. And this could be, James, I mean, this could be the kind of thing to, you know, get us kicked off YouTube again. Watch. They'll say this World Cup needs to stop, halt it, all of it, just stop it. But how about a double shot of quitters? Holy moly, Marty McCary resigns as FDA commissioner after internal tensions. James, I have said, I didn't vote for Trump. I don't like Trump. I enjoy how quickly people get fired. Growing up, watching the news, parents always had the news on. Of course, it makes sense that I've always been into the news. I've never seen people basically get bounced out of administration positions because they're not doing their job, or at least to the way that DJ Trump wants them to. Marty McCary resigned as commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration yesterday, stepping aside amid a swirl of reports that his tenure was coming to an end over internal policy disagreements like, you know, executive orders for glyphosate and also totally being healthy. His departure follows reports of conflict and tension over the FDA's agenda. On May 6th, the FDA approved some flavored e-cigarettes from the vaping company Glass Incorporated and touted its safety restrictions to limit use by young people, of course. According to the Wall Street Journal, the move came only after Mr. Trump pressured McCary to approve the fruit-flavored vapes, which had he been refusing to do so. One source familiar with the matter told the Paramount Sinai CBS News that McCary is leaving over the e-cig dispute, adding that the commissioner didn't want to approve the flavored varieties, but had been forced by other members of the administration. CBS News and other outlets had reported in recent days that Trump had signed off on a plan to fire him. McCary did not appear with the gang in the Oval Office Monday alongside the P resident and other top public health officials for an event on, what are we talking about? Oh, maternal health. Speaking to repeaters on the South Lawn of the White House, future site of UFC America 250, President said he did not want to discuss the circumstances of McCary's departure, but called him a great guy and a friend of mine. And by the time you are watching this, this guy would probably be well done as well. UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer rejects mounting calls to resign even from within his own party. Remember, the left will always just stab you in the front. British Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer insisted that he will get on with governing, rejecting calls from within his own party to step aside, which have been intensified by multiple resignations from his cabinet in the wake of disastrous results in local elections last week. A fifth of all members of the UK Parliament from Starmer's own Labour Party have now called on him to step down, and four members of his cabinet resigned in an effort to force him to quit. I joke, they're Gen Z kids and they didn't really want to go to work anyway. But honestly, James, I don't think Starmer has enough knees. It's kind of like Kanye. He doesn't have enough knees to bend to the Zionists. Starmer doesn't have enough knees to bend to the woke Marxist mobs. And, oh, also, by the way, they did just vote in the new non-federal, no reserves head. Kevin Warsh clinches Senate approval to be the Federal Reserve's next chair as inflation intensifies. James, they are shuffling the deck chairs on this Titanic, or shuffling the birdcage liner and the cage.
You took the words out of my mouth. That was exactly what I was going to say. You know me. I'm going to say shadows on the cave wall and all of that. But then I saw this startling headline from CNBC that set me straight. Jamie Dimon warns JP Morgan may rethink new London office if very smart Starmer is ousted as UK PM. And they go on to report JP Morgan Chase may reconsider a planned multi-billion dollar office tower in London if UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer is ousted, talking about their plans to build a new 3 million square foot tower in London's Canary Wharf financial district to house up to 12,000 employees and serve as its UK headquarters. But then, of course, it goes on to reveal that asked on Tuesday if the political instability gripping Britain changed his view on the mega project in London, Dimon responded that if a new government was hostile to the banks, then yes. So the actual headline should be something like, you know, hypothetical posed to Jamie Dimon, and he responded with a further hypothetical in which he would consider maybe scrapping some plan, which isn't quite the clickbait that CNBC wants. So they decided to, Jamie Dimon warns. We need the very smart Starmer in charge, said no one ever, except apparently Jamie Dimon. Okay, thank you. But just to further underline and reinforce the fact that this is all deck chairs on the Titanic, it does not matter at all to the actual agenda at play. Let's talk about the real power and the real power behind the throne. But obviously, they use the throne as their puppet mouthpiece. And thus, we get this headline from Biometric Update. The King's speech signals that Digital ID in the UK is a go again. The king hath spoken. His ministers will, quote, proceed with the introduction of digital ID that will modernize how citizens interact with public services, end quote. There you go. There's the agenda. Doesn't matter if Starmer or whoever else is in that seat. This is where they are taking you. And what will you, dear loyal subjects of the British Crown, do about it? Question mark.
It's interesting. Yeah, bankster threats. I won't come build my opulent tower if you don't play nice with my collaborators. James, I kind of buy the conspiracy theory that all the things we see in the U.S. are essentially moves to put us into bankruptcy. We are going into receivership. Hell, maybe that's why Trump is over in China right now, signing the rest of the states off. Yeah, because we're all in debt. Ward Churchill would call this tower, of course, full of little Eichmanns. Our third and final story on this New World Next Week, episode 630, more solutions. AI Safety Institute debuts with big name backers, censorship agenda from the fantastic folks at reclaimthenet.org and everything we talk about always linked up in your show notes. Common Sense Media's Youth AI Safety Institute arrived at the Danish Parliament this week. So we've got the Danish Parliament and the Netherlands, James. And the guest list is stacked with people who think you can't be trusted to speak freely online. And of course, we're proving them right every moment here. So we've got, of course, Hillary Karen. We've got Ursula von der Karen. We've got former Biden Surgeon General Vivek Murthy, Ofcom Chief Melanie Karen, and the head of an organization that wants to break end-to-end encryption, all gathering at Christiansborg Palace in Copenhagen to announce what they'd like to do next about AI and children. They mean next to AI and children. The Youth AI Safety Institute, launched by Common Sense Media way back on May 5th, says it will complement efforts by regulators and policymakers to translate frameworks such as the EU AI Act, the Digital Services Act, the UK Online Safety Act into practical protections for child-safe AI. See, and again, that's always the best. You just have to use the good AI. Those three censorship laws represent the most aggressive government-directed speech suppression regimes currently operating in the Western world, and the Institute isn't questioning a bit of it. In fact, it wants to help implement them and help push them further. The summit, titled Keeping Our Children and Family Safe in the AI Era, is co-hosted by Common Sense Media, Save the Children Denmark, Margareth Vestager, who spent years as the European Commission's executive vice president, building the regulatory architecture that now lets EU officials order platforms to delete content that they don't like. More than 200 policymakers, tech executives, and civil society figures are expected, and I hope, again, they all fly a bunch of private jets and carbon, all that stuff. King Frederick X of Denmark is giving the opening address. It's called No Kings, except for this. The Duchess of Edinburgh will attend. Danish, tasty. Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen is also on the bill, and so is Pinterest CEO Bill Reddy, whose company helped pay for the Institute's creation. You might have heard me praise the fact that places like Etsy, Tumblr, Pinterest never sold out to the giant tech fangsters, but now it doesn't look like they have to. Pinterest, no! And in related news, James, the FSU shooting lawsuit that could turn ChatGPT into a surveillance tool. What is it now? It's like saying, I might lose some faith in government. James, it's getting worse and worse with this whole internet trash.
Isn't it, though? And in fact, it almost seems like such an obvious pattern that there should be a name for it. We see these wonderful services introduced, and they do things that, hey, that's cool, that's convenient, it's free, it's awesome, and it gradually gets worse and worse and more surveilled and more buggy and more ad-prone and all of that until it's almost unusable and you hate and resent the fact that it is now wedded into your life. Oh, there is a name for that. It is enchidification. That term was coined by Cory Doctorow a couple of years ago. It's taken off in the meantime. And my audience should know about it because, of course, I did that recent Solutions Watch on 10 tips for de-enchidifying the internet. So if you haven't seen that yet, people should check that out. But The question really is, if you try to de-inchitify AI, will there be anything left? Because that all is all it is at base. But anyway, yes, of course, this is the part where they start revealing to you what the AI chatbots and all of this, these super convenient tools that they've just been giving you because they love you so much, are really about. Total surveillance, total enslavement, and of course, ultimately, total psychosis. And if people are interested in the AI psychosis and how it's affecting people like Richard Dawkins and where it's going from here, they can check out an editorial that I'm writing in my newsletter this weekend on the Claude delusion. But I'll just leave it there for now. Anyway, yes, no surprise at all. And anyone who is using any of these AI as their personal confidant should know everything you say is being surveilled.
We are, we've helped build the panopticon. I posed the question this morning on the air. I don't know how we can complain about data centers. You ain't listening to Media Monarchy on a paper envelope. We're all using this garbage. And I think, as I've joked, like, I was already swimming in the pool of Brave browser. They started to pour in the AI urine once I was already in there. I didn't see it and go, oh, gosh, I want to jump into that. See, that's the frog boil. And what, when you try and crawl out, the crab will come and get you. Mixing our New World Order metaphors. James, I wonder, I speculate, is it possible that the next generation will be more hardcore than Generation X as far as having absolutely nothing to do with any of this? I believe I was reading some sci-fi the other day and it made some reference to it. Well, after the Luddite riots destroyed everything. So, of course, you better get your media that you're going to want to enjoy, of course, long into the years of the New World Order surveillance state. I do play the exclusive audio of these New World Next Week episodes before they are published on my radio stream at MediaMonarchy.com/listen. We have the post office box, as I have called the original private communications platform. I don't think Hoover's busting open too much of our mail. I don't think they really have too much time for that until they need a giant psyop like they need on their trains and other events. But for now, P.O. Box 189, El Rito, New Mexico, 87530. And we run newworldnextweek.com, and the promise has come true. The Korber Report 2019 USBs are now available. And James, I got to ask you, what are some of the greatest hits on your latest 2019 USB?
I should have been prepared for that question.
I wrote it in the
thing. But I am not. Thank you. That is an excellent question, which I will answer next week. Stay tuned, everybody. Everything that you know and love from 2019 is on that USB. And I'm trying to think, what was my documentary production in 2019? And then I'm not remembering off the top of my head. But anyway, you know what, people, this is a good opportunity, a learning opportunity for people to explore the Korber Report website and its 2019 archives and decide, you know what, there's so much stuff. I can't even decide what I would like from this. I want it all. And if you want it all, get the USB.
James, I think probably the first USB thumb drive that I got back in the day was given to me by one of the faculty at the college radio station because he knew I was working there all the time as my main passion. He gave me a USB drive that had 128 megs. You could put two albums, compact discs that you had ripped into digital MP3 files. You could probably put two of those albums. I was doing the music directing at the college radio station, so I could take stuff, rip it at the station, take it back to my home and be able to edit a little bit, take it back to this. I believe this is somewhere around 60 gigs, James. Each USB drive, of course, gets bigger and bigger and bigger because that's also just the way all of this goes. And we might have people that aren't able to use the Media Monarchy website again. Everything escalates, but it's like our, cost of living. That never changes. Your computer hardware doesn't get better, but they keep forcing more and more through it, and it makes it more and more difficult to handle again. Kind of bummed at this whole internet thing, but I appreciate that everybody's out there and can go get the USB 2019. James, I think that's it for New World Next Week, episode 630, my friend. I appreciate you.
I think that is it. Let me just put the plug in for the Media Monarchy t-shirts if people are looking for some swag, they can, of course, go to newworldnextweek.com. And if they're looking for some information and news, of course, they can just stay tuned for New World Next Week. Each week, we will be here bringing you the news and information that matters. But that'll do it for this week. James, thank you for your time.
Thanks so much, buddy. Take care.